Trovic. This is the Responsible Luxury Podcast, bringing together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders, and CEOs here to start conversations. Because simply uniting hearts and minds and collaborating on ideas has the power to create major impact and change the way we see the world. Here we go. This week, I welcome you to a very special episode of the Responsible Luxury Podcast. I am so excited to share with you part one of a two-part episode series featuring live and unfiltered interviews recorded during the first Responsible Luxury roundtable and dinner. To give you some context behind this dinner was an idea that predates this podcast, and the idea was to bring together key players in diverse industries to spark discussions and explore new avenues for advancing the luxury industry forward, both socially and environmentally. I thought rather than sticking to traditional formal networking events like conferences, I really wanted to curate an intimate evening where meaningful connections could flourish. A few months back, I reached out to my network to see if there was any interest, and I was talking back and forth with a few people. So fast forward a few weeks later, in collaboration with IGI, SCS, Onza Gems, and Laurenti, together we hosted a private dinner during New York Climate Week attended by 40 carefully selected guests from major brands and companies, including Kering, LVMH, Signet, and more. The evening was exceptional and so elegant and truly unforgettable. Our goal for this dinner was to bring together leaders and change makers driving this next generation of responsible luxury and create a dialogue and forge connections across jewelry, watches, fashion, education, and tech industries. The evening showcased how we stand on the cusp of a new era in luxury thinking, and our guests and conversations were nothing short of inspiring. If you haven't yet, do check out our Instagram content videos for a glimpse of the evening. Join me into part one, where we gain insights from a diverse lineup of industry luminaries. Each conversation is a gem in itself, reflecting the innovative spirit driving the luxury landscape forward. This is a testament to the evolving perspectives and inspirations shaping the industry's future. And trust me, every second is worth it. For those short on time, timestamps for each interview are provided in the show notes below, allowing you to dive straight into the conversations that resonate with you the most. Please enjoy.
We are live at the first year of the Responsible Luxury Roundtable and Dinner, and I am so honored to be here right now with Malia McNaughton, and we are going to dig deep into some questions. Malia, how is the evening so far?
Oh my goodness, it's beautiful. The space is lovely. The energy is great, and I'm just so happy to be here with everyone.
This is a really special interview. We have people from the diamond jewelry industry, education, some tech people, so very diverse group. So to kick us off, Malia, let's start with a reflective question, and that is, what fundamental shift do you believe is necessary for the industry to embrace sustainability and responsibility as core values rather than just trends to follow?
Oh, that's such a phenomenal question. And one of the ways I think that can be done is reflecting that information back to the consumer. As a jewelry designer and gemologist, one of the things that I try to stress so much is that the impact of purchasing something that has such sentimental value really does impact the communities that it comes from. And recently I had the honor to visit Botswana and being able to see there the impact that the gem and jewelry industry has on the country and the people there. I'm visiting India on this coming weekend and being able to, again, see the impact and influence that we have. And I think translating that to the consumers is really impactful in telling our stories and really adds a layer to how they perceive their jewelry as well.
I love that. And you're face-to-face with the consumers. You're doing something very special, and it's like a certain alchemy in a way, being able to capture this memory, these stories, a point in time, and into this treasured heirloom that's going to be passed down many generations, which is not something that a lot of industries can say they could do. So it's really an art and a science. So, you know, in this world we live in where consumers crave the authenticity and purpose in their purchasing decisions, What ways do you believe that jewelry can leverage its resources to be a catalyst for driving positive change in economic, environmental, and social contexts?
Oh my goodness, how you laid that foundation for the question, I think exactly what jewelry is. It really is something that can be passed on from generation to generation. And the fact that a piece that you can invest in and, you know, buy with the intention to celebrate your family and your heritage can also have this duality where it supports the story of providing people with all the resources that they need and really elevating the work that we're doing to really promote sustainability. I think that that's the impact that we have in this industry that I agree. I don't know another industry that has that same impact. So I'm really excited to get that message out there because once people see it, like consumers who want to be involved in the selection of their stones and being able to tell them, you know, the traceability and the transparency around that stone, it really just add to the story of them being able to share that with others around their community.
Sharing with others, and it's such a deeper connection to building something custom from the ground up. So as we consider this intersection of luxury and responsible practices, like you mentioned, how can we engage both industry leaders and consumers in a collaborative effort to redefine luxury in a way that prioritizes transparency and respect for the artists and skills and traditions? And I know you're going to have a lot more to say once you visit India.
No, I think that, you know, a lot of my manufacturing now is done in India. And I just am so appreciative of the fact that they have continued to pioneer and generations and continue to be innovative and follow the path of creating something for us to enjoy. And I've created some really difficult designs and they have seen it as no challenge at all. And I think that really speaks to the innovation that's bound to happen over time. And I'm just so thrilled that being able to see that in real time develop. So I think that we're really only beginning when it comes to connecting the innovation that is there with the mission and the inventiveness around sustainability.
And I always say there's no problem that a jeweler or a designer can't solve because it's a very creative mind head to head with a problem. So I love it. So, you know, being a designer, your fashion often sets trends that transcends clothing and accessories by influencing our culture and our societal norm. How can we harness the power of fashion, particularly jewelry, to promote these sustainable practices, celebrate diversity, and foster more innovation within our industry?
I think the way forward, and my background is actually fashion, so I think I'm uniquely positioned to speak about this. I think coming from the fashion world and seeing how the jewelry world is so intertwined with fashion, but really speaks its own language, I think that the way forward is really to create new pathways and initiatives that allow for new generations of jewelry lovers and enthusiasts to get involved, whether that's through information sessions or jewelry making classes or gem info sessions, or what we've done over at BIJC, which is the Future Jewelers Academy, where you allow for students at high school to learn about the jewelry industry through bench jewelry making, really allowing them to then spread the word and be the innovators that really speak about what the jewelry industry is doing because they're personally being impacted. And we're teaching them at that age about sustainability and the impact of the jewelry industry.
Teaching younger minds these things early on is like soaking up the sponge. So I'm sure watching their lights light up in their eyes is like another experience in itself. So what challenges do you foresee in the luxury industry facing a transition towards a more sustainable and responsible model? And how do you think these challenges can be overcome?
I think some of the challenges are just the information, the misinformation, the lack of information being disseminated properly. I think consumers kind of come in with these fears and we have to, as you know, jewelers who are on the forefront or gemologists, we have to provide facts and we have to stay in front of the facts. And I think that's the biggest challenge, is really being that transparency advocate that allows people to know what's really happening behind the curtain, providing all the access points that they are allowed to see what's actually being provided to them.
And we talked about education at the Academy, PIJC. You know, what role do you believe this next generation plays in shaping this transformation?
Oh my goodness, they have so many new ideas. They really are going to be the ones that teach us how to move forward. They ask all the right questions. They want to know all the information. They want to just take in everything. So I think they're really teaching us what the younger generation is looking for. They want to be involved in the process from the beginning until the end. And I think that's going to be the future of the consumerism. And so I think getting it from their perspective is really going to benefit us all.
And it's this emerging concept of co-creation, co-creating products, co-creating these businesses. Looking ahead, Malia, what are your hopes and visions for the future of responsible luxury? And how do you believe we can inspire and empower the next generation of leaders to become more aligned with principles of sustainability and social responsibility?
I think the way forward is really just to continue to find new ways to invite folks who may not have otherwise been invited into the jewelry industry. The jewelry industry, as we know, is multi-generational, which I love. But as a first-generation jeweler, there are so many barriers to entry that I really look forward to incorporating more areas that first-generation jewelers can be found and discovered in the industry.
You are an entrepreneur yourself and an amazing businesswoman. What advice would you have for aspiring entrepreneurs looking to create a successful business or career that not only thrives financially, but also contributes positively to our society and the planet?
Oh, I would say authenticity is key. I think for me, I've remained authentic from the beginning, and that's what led me to becoming a jewelry designer. I started out in fashion and realized that although I loved it, there was something else that I wanted to pursue, and jewelry was the perfect fit and allows me to give back in a way that I could never imagine. So I would say remain authentic.
It's one of those universal principles that is a good guiding light, North Star, for us to lead by. So one last question for you, Malia, is innovation is really key in driving progress in any industry, especially our own. You know, being in fashion and jewelry, you have to constantly, when you finish a first collection, you automatically have to start thinking about the next one. So considering the evolving landscape of sustainable luxury, what innovative approaches or technologies do you see as game changers and advancing responsible practices within the jewelry sector?
Oh man, I think it's the technology that's coming out around traceability. I think as a designer, again, with consumers who are asking constantly about where their stones originate from, being able to tell them that this technology is being developed, whether it's happened already, or even the technology that's being developed around stone cutting and the uniqueness around customizing stone cuts. I think technology really is going to be a way that we co-create as well.
Malia, thank you so much for answering some of the questions today. I'm really excited to launch this and for people to hear you on the podcast for the first time. So where can listeners find you, follow and connect with you after the episode?
Absolutely. You can find me on all social platforms at Made by Malia. Malia is spelled M-A-L-Y-I-A.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And it looks like everyone's sitting down for dinner now. So let's take our seats. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Welcome to the first year of the Responsible Luxury Roundtable and Dinner. Thank you for being here.
Delighted to be here.
So this is exciting because it's going to be an in-person podcast for the first time. Just to kick things off, we're here tonight talking about topics around responsible luxury. And I wanted to ask you, what's a fundamental shift do you believe that's necessary for our industry to embrace sustainability and responsibility as core values rather than just a trend to follow?
To think about the relationship between the ESGs that we are all thinking about and the actual product that is being produced, mined, or extracted, and to understand that sustainability or responsible practice, that is in effect a value, but it does not eclipse the value of quality. It complements quality, and we need to be fearless in talking about the fact that these are strengths. Just as the beauty of an object is a strength, so is its responsible sourcing. And that, I hope, will help us, in a sense, come out of the shadows, as opposed to something that I see, which is that a lot of these conversations still, even though you have Grand Maison embracing these ideas, they embrace them to the side. It's not part of the major campaign, the major articulation, and as one of the core attributes that differentiate and elevate the product.
I love that. As we consider this intersection of luxury and responsible practices, how can we engage both luxury leaders and consumers in the collaborative effort to redefine luxury in a way that prioritizes these ESG goals, like you mentioned, ethical sourcing, transparency, and respect for these artisan skills and tradition?
Well, in order to have people value something, they have to know about it. And I think one of the things that we do that I might perhaps rethink is we speak about wanting the consumer to tell us. But if we are really leading, and these are values that are important to us, we should articulate them, we should stand for them, we should embrace them, and bring the world along. Because if you wait, you could be standing by the curb for an awfully long time. Whereas if you lead, you turn something that you're informing people about into a virtue for which you stand and for which and which you embody. So I think that's one of the things that I would say is critical to bringing people and engineering something of a shift, if you will, in the culture and the paradigm.
Looking ahead, what are some of your hopes and visions for the future of responsible luxury? And how do you believe we can help inspire and empower the next generation of leaders to become more aligned with principles of sustainability and social responsibility?
In terms of helping the next generation be more aligned, I think one of the things is to create an understanding of exactly what it is that we're talking about, as opposed to simply having verbiage, if you will, flung about. And so, for example, with climate, this is one of the things that has really concerned me, is that people will come to the discussion here, SBTIs, etc. It's alphabet soup. They start to use the alphabet soup. They don't understand the concrete thing that that reference or the nexus of problems that can be represented by the confluence of issues. So I think speaking clearly about what the taglines reference is one of the ways to help bring people along, because you can't expect them to come along to what they don't understand. And frankly, I think there are many people who use those terms now who could do well with the same kind of concrete explanation. And I think it also helps us to make better choices, because you can have an informed discussion, say five minds do these things. Well, we may not do one of those things, but perhaps they spark in our mind, oh, wow, if I tried A and D, perhaps that would be something that would work for me. So that's part of what I think. And also, I would say we are here for a very short time. Don't know how long. And this may sound Pollyanna-ish and perhaps un-PC, but joyfulness and purposeful embrace is, you know, what was the great song? There is no time for fussing and fighting, my friend.
Lisa, thank you. And where can people find you and follow and support your work later on?
Well, I'm the founder and president of Initiatives in Art and Culture, and we have a website. We are on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So you can find me at any one of those places. And I would love to hear from anybody who has questions or comments. There's a lot to do, and partnership is critical.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
I just want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is a jam-packed Climate Week, UN Week, trying to get down here, get through traffic. And it just makes me feel so joyful to see all of your faces. And I know that my co-sponsors, Kat from SCS and Lauren from Responsible Luxury Podcast and Monica from ANZA, all feel the same way. We're just so happy to host you tonight. And while many of you guys are from different parts of the industry, we have artisanal miners, we have designers, we have huge retailers. Everybody around this table is truly committed to the values of Climate Week, to sustainability, to being responsible stewards of the precious metals and gemstones that we're lucky to work with in our professional lives. So I really hope you'll mix and mingle, and I'm happy to help you do that. If you're a little shy and you don't know everybody, there's some really exciting pilot projects. People hear from Billion Oyster Project, of course, Monica, all of Monica's great work, all the wonderful work that's happening in Brazil. And I really hope you'll meet at least one or two new people tonight and start a new conversation. That's kind of like the whole point, to enjoy ourselves, have a beautiful meal, and to meet a few new people, maybe spark some ideas about actions we can take together to really live the values of Climate Week. And the theme this year for New York Climate Week in general is it's time. So we really want to encourage you that embody that and feel like it's time to really take action and live our values and make really fun and interesting things happen together. And with that, we're lucky to have our global CEO of IGI in town, Tehmasp Printer. So I'll turn it over to him to welcome everybody.
I'm very happy to be here. And it's going to be quite a nice, awesome time to get to know all of you, which I will to do. Thanks to Tiffany, who's the new head of IGI of North America. We're very happy with her leadership. And together, we're surely going to go ahead. So, a raise to all you wonderful people. Cheers.
I'm here with Michelle Graff from National Jeweler. We're sitting side by side at dinner this evening, and we just happen to be speaking about some stories about family and our relationship and love for jewelry. And I'm going to ask Michelle to tell a story about her grandmother's jewelry.
So the piece I have for my grandmother that I wear the most often is a medallion necklace that has diamonds in it that were broken out from a cocktail ring her mother-in-law, so my great-grandmother, gave to her. She did not like the style of that ring, and she had the diamonds broken out and had a number of pieces made. I have one of the pieces. My mother has one of the pieces. My aunt has a piece. My cousin has a piece. So, you know, everybody has a little bit of this ring. But I think the favorite piece that I have that used to belong to my grandmother is a charm from a charm bracelet. My grandmother had a charm bracelet, and there were all these, I don't know how best to explain them. They were little gold heads, and they were silhouettes. And there was a boy silhouette and a girl silhouette. And every time she had a new grandchild, she picked either the boy or the girl, depending on which one it was, and she had our names and our date of birth engraved on the back. So obviously, I have the female silhouette, and it says Michelle 8-7-8-25-78, my birthday, on August 25th, 1978. So I've just revealed my age. But anyway, I love it, and I just think, like, I can picture my grandmother wearing the bracelet with all the silhouettes on it. And it just brings back such nice memories for me, and I treasure it forever.
And the impermanence of jewelry is something that's so special and unique. And I think, you know, one of the things that brings us all together here tonight is connection with the industry and jewelry. And there are some of the most fascinating people that we have the pleasure of getting to work with. So looking ahead, what are some of your hopes and visions for the future of responsible luxury? And how do you believe we can help inspire and empower the next generation of leaders to become more aligned with principles of sustainability and social responsibility?
So as a journalist, you know, we're inundated with a lot of surveys, a lot of reports, a lot of quote studies. And they always talk about how, oh, the next generation, they're very concerned about the planet and they're very concerned about where things come from. And I hope that really comes to pass, and I hope people start paying better attention to where things are made, how they made, how they're benefiting or not benefiting the people that make them. So I think this kind of thing we've read about for years now about the millennials, and now we're reading about Gen Z, and now we're reading it even about Gen Alpha, which is the generation after Gen Z. I hope that comes to pass and people ask more questions about the products and where they're coming from. And I hope when people consume that they think about consuming in a responsible manner and not just consuming for the sake of consuming and having something because you saw it on Instagram, you saw it on TikTok, but really being thoughtful about how much you're consuming and where it was made and how it was made.
You are in this unique position of working directly with industry leaders, you're a leader yourself in the space, and also with consumers who's reading all of this information and data. So with that, as we consider the intersection of luxury and responsible practices, how can we engage both industry leaders and consumers in a collaborative effort to redefine luxury in a way that prioritizes ethical sourcing, transparency, and respect for artisan skills and traditions with jewelry making?
I think for younger consumers, I mean, this is going to sound trite, but it's about meeting them where they're at. You know, taking stories to TikTok, taking stories to Instagram stories, to Reels, to YouTube, and telling them in formats that the people today are paying attention to. You know, currently we're in an election cycle here, obviously in the United States this year,
And I've seen so many interviews where they're interviewing people about who are you voting for, but also how are you getting your news? And, you know, so many times people say social media X or this or that. And I think that we really have to embrace modern platforms for this modern message to make sure we're reaching consumers today.
And innovation is key for driving progress in any industry, especially our own in the diamond and jewelry space. So considering the evolving landscape of sustainable luxury, what innovative approaches or technologies do you see as game changers in advancing responsible practices within the jewelry sector?
I mean, I guess the number one thing that comes to mind for me is blockchain and like having a way to not just say, oh, this came from here. Okay, sign on the dotted line. I say it came from here. And then the next person says, well, he told me or she told me it came from here. Like, there's no reason we shouldn't be using computers and blockchain and technology to trace gems, whether diamonds or colored gemstones, from mine to market. And I think that's what consumers are going to expect and want. And I think that's what we should be doing.
I want to dig deeper into that because I'm very, very bullish on blockchain, especially in the diamond and jewelry space. And I think of so many potential projects that we could dig into, marrying the technology with the industry. You know, for one, it's, you know, thinking about the entire ecosystem of supply chains. I mean, supply chain transparency and the authentication and the provenance. I mean, imagine if like we had a whole blockchain for the industry or something to be able to track and trace this.
And I don't know how widely available it is, but right, imagine if you had, when you bought, for example, you have some emerald earrings on, correct, right?
Yes.
Imagine if when you bought those emeralds, they came with a little certificate that had a QR code and they showed you not just where it was mined, but who mined it.
Yes.
And who mined it, where it went for them, and who manufactured it, and how it ended up to you. Like, how amazing would that be? I mean, I think that's really where luxury, not just jewelry, but luxury in general is headed. And I think for once, jewelry should aim to be out in front instead of lagging behind. Because I feel like that's a problem with luxury, or excuse me, with jewelry is we've always been a little bit behind. You know, I feel like we were kind of the last adopters of e-commerce and e-commerce selling and social media. Like, we really had to push people into it. And I hope we don't repeat that same mistake when we have this opportunity now to use technology for sourcing the information and responsible sourcing.
And taking also that one step further is, I love your idea of the QR code and being able to trace it to the mines, the craftsperson, the miner who mined the stone, you know, taking that beyond the sale. We were talking about your grandmother's jewelry earlier. If we were able to, you know, track and see where your grandmother, being able to see in 25, 50 years from now, like where that piece of jewelry was worn, would be really not only emotionally very desirable, but also from a history perspective, you know, to see who is in the room, like what series of events were happening.
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing? Like if I gave this piece, you know, if I bought something today and passed it on to somebody and they could say, oh, well, this was mined here in this year by this person. And then my mother, grandmother, whoever bought it and gave it to me, you know what I mean? It's just, and I think the go back to the QR codes, I think it's just going to become part of it because that's how, like, you have to think about younger consumers, right? There's so many consumers today that have no idea what it's like to live life without a cell phone. And we have to think about that. We have to think about, it's a totally different mindset than I grew up with.
I think that, I mean, you're exactly right. You said a really good point earlier, which was, let's be able to use the platforms we have today to deliver the messages, like have younger generations take information and blast it on TikTok, blast it on Instagram. It's information just like how maybe slightly older people read the newspaper nowadays. You know, the information is received differently. So I love that. Michelle, thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to the rest of this dinner. Thank you for joining us. Before we head out today, I wanted to ask for listeners who want to follow you and want to connect after this episode, where's the best place for them to find you?
My personal favorite platform is, I mean, this is going to sound boring, but it's LinkedIn. So I think LinkedIn, you know, at one point, like there was a long time ago, intelligent conversation going on Facebook. And I don't think that's the case anymore. I think all of the kind of like, when I think about sharing business articles, where business to business trade publications, sharing articles where I want to get intelligent commentary and conversation, LinkedIn. So I honestly don't know my handle right off the bat, but you can, yeah, I think it's @MichelleMGraff or @MichelleGraff. You can find me. It's my picture. different hair, but it's my picture. And that's where I do most of my conversing with people.
Thank you, Michelle, so much.
Thank you.
I am here with Samantha Ori and Serene Wang at almost the third or fourth course of the Responsible Luxury Roundtable and Dinner tonight. And we are having a lot of amazing conversations tonight. The energy and the vibes are immaculate. Everyone is really just like collaborating, and the night is going really well so far. And I have some dear friends with me that I want to bring into this conversation tonight. And it's going to be interesting because I have two people interviewing at the same time. So it's going to be much more of a collaborative effort. Samantha is involved in later stage private equity and buyout of brands and companies. And Serene is in education. So she brings a really valuable perspective on this next generation. So starting off with Samantha, we're here tonight at the Responsible Luxury Roundtable and Dinner. What fundamental shift do you believe is necessary for the luxury industry to embrace sustainability and responsibility as core values rather than just trends to follow?
That's a great question. You know, I think that we're seeing a shift in more sustainable supply chain management, right? So in terms of the ethical nature of how we treat the employees, how we're treating the brand, and going forward, how we're PRing the brand out into the world, right? This has become such a global economy, and I think it's important that we have all stakeholders that are really held responsible and are involved in the entire process from end to end.
And Serene, so with your perspective, same question for you. Again, what fundamental shift do you believe is necessary for the luxury industry to embrace sustainability and responsibility as core values rather than just trends to follow?
I'm here mostly because I want to support Lauren, but at the same time, I feel like anything that can call luxury has a value that can long lasting. And I think that's the value of sustainability. Just like today, I'm wearing my mom's jewelry. I think that's a representation of sustainability of jewelry. And my mom passed it to me, and I will pass to my children in the future. And that brings the value to luxury products. So if we just buying and selling for one circle, that's fast fashion. That's not luxury. So that's how I feel about the luxury market. At the same time, because I'm from education, so we talk about sustainability for how people get into education, how to sustain the family education all the time. So I do feel it's very relevant.
I think that is very well said, and especially talking about sustainability in education, and we're talking about this next generation of leaders coming up and going to be taking on these industries that we're leading ourselves. As we consider the intersection of luxury and responsible practices, how can we engage both industry leaders and consumers or students in a collaborative effort to redefine luxury in a way that prioritizes ethical sourcing, transparency, and respect for artisans' skills and tradition?
You know, it's a great question. I think that bringing the artisans and the students into the mix together and having these founders teach the past, right, and have them teach where they came from and where they're going really gives these younger students an appreciation of the craft and also of moving forward where they can also bring their own creative spin on it but still maintain those traditions going forward.
So you mentioned supply chain and transparency before, and I have a good question that relates very well to you, is thinking about supply chains playing a very critical role in shaping sustainability and the profile of luxury goods. How can jewelry brands or other luxury brands establish traceability and accountability through their supply chains to ensure ethical sourcing and support local communities?
Another great question. You know, I think that a lot of it really stems from showing the story to the customer and taking the photos, showing these stories of these gemologists and where the staff comes from, and even going into the diamond mines and going into all of the different assortment of gems and saying, you know, this is where this comes from. Let's go from, you know, the earth into the artisanal process of crafting the jewelry, into the design process, into that kind of that D2C element really brings the customer in. It shows a sense of community, and also shows a sense of authenticity and transparency.
Yes, 100%. And throwing it back to you, Serene. So, Serene, looking ahead, what are your hopes and vision for the future of responsible luxury? And how do you believe we can help inspire and empower the next generation of leaders to become more aligned with principles of sustainability and social responsibility?
I think oftentimes, especially on social media, people associate luxury with logo. But luxury is way beyond just some logos. It's legacy. So as educator, I think it's important to let the student know what is real luxury in life. Build their own legacy, especially the future leaders. And also think of what is really the meaning of luxury for them in their lifestyle. So right now, well, maybe some luxury brand is luxury, but offline time is actually the new luxury. The time you just spend with your family, your pet, your friends, without looking at your phone is kind of luxury. So I think the educator has a responsibility to make the student realize what does the meaning of luxury means in their life, other than just logos or a quick train and TikTok.
I love that. I love the piece of legacy, and legacy is about being able to transfer these really valuable principles and skill sets to help build the next generation of our industries and our world. And considering the evolving landscape of sustainable luxury, what innovative approaches and especially technologies do you see as game changers and advancing responsible practices within the jewelry sector and broader consumer industry? Because I know you deal with a lot of other consumer brands.
I think that in terms of utilizing technology, utilizing AI in a responsible way to help within the supply chain management process, to help create that transparency, but not use it on the D2C side where there's any sort of deception, but still having that this is, you know, the authentic gem that you're going to be getting, and this is an authentic person wearing the authentic gem, but really on the back end supply chain, having that efficiency and saying, okay, well, we could be automating this process and we could be doing this better and we could be accounting for X, Y, and Z to also maximize the margins without cutting the staff who really were the ones that brought this to being is incredibly important.
Yes, I agree. And being able to not cut any profits and bring it back to the consumer in full value is super important. Serene, for you, you know, building, you just hit 10 years with your company, Elite Link Education. I wanted to ask, what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs looking to create a successful business or career that not only thrives financially, but also contributes positively to society and the planet?
So I remember when I was in business school, my professor said, starting a business is about solving a problem, bring a great group of people together, and have a great product. So I think those still applies for today. Like if you want to starting a business, you want to solve a problem. With that, that's a longer term vision. And for me and my company, it's intersection. It's a very sweet spot for me because a lot of people hate Mondays because, you know, it's a lot, it's working. But me, I'm the weirdo that I love my job so much. I like to go to my office to see my team, because we have a bigger vision of helping students. And we're in this really sweet intersection of education and technology, and of course, sustainability. We want to help more students to have accessibility for higher education and private education as well. So if anyone is interested in starting their own business, one thing is if they have a job, I would recommend not leave the job yet, but starting their business on the side first. And once you see your business is thriving, that's the time you leave your day job. And the second thing is think about what kind of problem you're solving and how that impacts the society. So if you are doing your business, revenue is one thing, but if you are building a very sustainable business that's solving a social problem, that's like a very long-term legacy.
And I think that's a perfect closeout for the episode today. Samantha, where can listeners find you to follow you and support the work that you're doing in the private equity space and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. They can follow me on my Instagram at Sam_I_M888. They can also follow me on Skyfall Assets, my different investment vehicles as well.
Amazing. And Serene, where is the best place for our listeners to find you and follow you and your amazing work, and also reach out for any education opportunities?
People can find me on LinkedIn, Serene Wan. Serene is like Serenity, S-E-R-E-N-E. It's like my personality. And also my Instagram, Serene/MOGU, Mogul.
Thank you guys so much. And we have our next course waiting for us. So we are going to conclude this segment. Thank you so much for joining.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to this special two-part series. I'm grateful beyond words for hosting this special dinner experience, and it's really a dream come true to curate these moments and witness the power of community building and collaboration that transcends industries. We had a very diverse guest at the table, including artisanal miners, designers, huge retailers, educators, executive leaders, and founders. The cross-collaboration of these remarkable individuals, both in and beyond the jewelry world, has shown us that collective action is the key to progress and success in any endeavor. Only together can we hold the potential to create impactful change that resonates far and wide, paving the way to a brighter tomorrow. Your ideas and enthusiasm are the driving force behind this community. Let's continue building a positive impact together as we journey towards more growth, learning, and connection. I believe the future is filled with endless opportunities, and I thank you for being a part of this journey. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast show wherever you get your podcasts, and follow at Responsible Luxury Pod on Instagram. I look forward to our continued conversations, exploration, and experiences. Thank you once again, and I will talk with you soon.